All right. Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of Leadership Chalk Talk. I have a special episode for you today. We're going to be a little bit selfish in a good way. We're going to focus on ourselves. We're going to talk about and think about our career, how we can make the most of it, how we can be fulfilled. And there's a really important part of that in sports, right? A lot of sports are team sports, but you have to think about yourself. You have to take care of yourself, because when you're your best, then the team's going to be at their best. And I'm super excited to welcome in Dr. Benjamin Ritter. He is an executive leadership coach. He has founded the company Live for Yourself Consulting, and he really spends a lot of time helping people to get the most out of their career, to understand what they really want and to go and achieve it. So with that, Ben, thanks for coming on the program, man.
I'm so pumped to be here. I usually talk about my sports experiences and background as like a foundation when I'm on other shows. And I haven't ever had the opportunity to go on a show where that's kind of the main focus. So this is really neat.
Yeah, thanks. And you have a little bit of a sports background, right? That you played soccer at a pretty high level. We'll dive into that at some point. But before we do that, can you just tell us a little bit about your background? As I mentioned at the top, you do a lot around leadership, coaching, executive coaching, helping people with their careers. Tell the listeners a little bit about the work you do.
Yeah, we work with senior leaders or individuals that are on the senior leadership path, either self-funded or reimbursed through leadership development programs from an organization, to help individuals get greater career clarity, right, define their professional brand, which tends to also be called executive presence, and then take that information and turn it into something real. They take some action and help create careers that people can say they fall in love with. Now, I have experience working internal within organizations, growing talent development programs and executive coaching programs, developing performance management systems, ensuring the candidate and associate experience is top-notch, that people actually say they can love their organization and increases retention rates. So I kind of have a dual perspective on how do we create organizations that people can fall in love with, and how can we as individuals help those organizations become places we can fall in love with, as well as how can we craft our jobs to be positions that we can say that we love, and, you know, not just for today, but in the future.
Basically, you do it all. You're a five-tool player, all positions. Appreciate that backdrop. You said one thing that I wanted to dive into quickly about helping people to find their personal brand, which is a euphemism for executive presence, if you will. My experience, executive presence is often one of the most quoted things, right, that holds people back, or when we think about talent reviews. Can you talk a little bit about the work you do for that and kind of what you see from your lens related to executive presence?
It's such an ambiguous word, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I have individuals that come to me and they're like, I'm held back. I didn't get that promotion, or I didn't get that interview. They said I didn't have that executive presence that I need. It's like, okay, what is executive presence? Did they get specific about it? Did they give you any more information? Number one rule of feedback, SBIC. You have to be specific. You have to talk about the behavior. You have to talk about the impact, and you have to create a commitment. And very often people get held up because the feedback is too ambiguous. So in my perspective and how I work with clients, executive presence is really four main pillars. You have your vision. So what do you stand for? What are your values? Where are you going in your career? How do you also communicate the organizational vision? Like when you show up or when people talk about you, is it consistent with what you want to bring to the world and what you want people to think about you? You have your actual presence. That is your charisma, your energy, how you dress, how you engage in meetings. Very critical. People tend to forget that they are being watched. And if you want to learn how a leader shows up in your organization, instead of doing something else during a meeting, actually pay attention to the leaders in the room. The third, and these aren't in any specific order, is reliability. So do you follow up and do you follow through? Can people count on you? That develops trust. It also, become someone that people can count on. And they know that you're going to do the thing that you say that you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Also, really, all of these are really important for sports, by the way. And then the fourth is credibility. Are you actually good at the thing that you say you're good at? Do people see you as a subject matter expert? So you also have to put in the work to make sure that you do have the skills that you need to excel in your organization as well as your industry.
A lot of good stuff there. Hopefully, audience is tuning into a couple of takeaways there. One thing you mentioned around like charisma, dress, kind of how you show up. sometimes a barrier, I think, and maybe that's a self-limiting belief that I hear from folks, is this resistant to change. And they kind of guise that under authenticity. Like, that's not who I am. I want to be me. And there is this element of a difference between changing who you are versus growing and growing into the role that you want to see. Do you ever come across that when you're coaching folks around this tension between those two things? And how do you address that?
I'm so happy that you brought this up, because it is so true. But imagine if you were on a sports field and you just were feeling kind of lazy one day. And so instead of running the sprints, you just sat down. Or when someone yelled at you to, you know, to pass, you said no, because you didn't feel like passing instead of playing like the team. Or maybe you just don't show up to practice because you're not feeling it that day. Or maybe you swear regularly on the pitch when everyone on the team, but no one else swears. And so each and every single one of those situations, you are isolating yourself. You're not using the skills that you have. You're not following the rules to exceed and excel and to win. You are basically fighting to fail. Like, you are trying to fail. And so if you know that having a little bit more energy in a meeting and also not getting too angry and being calm is going to get you what you need as a leader and convince people and persuade them or help create an environment that is more persuasive to them, then all you're doing are using the skills you have at your disposal as a leader to help your team win. And so all of this, oh, it's not me, is actually just trying to make an excuse to be more comfortable instead of enjoy a little bit of discomfort to win.
I like how you said that authenticity is an excuse to stay in your comfort zone, right? Or people use that as an excuse sometimes. I've probably been guilty of that myself. So listeners, think about that. Think of the times when you were resistant to change, that you were using that language of, I want to be my authentic self, as opposed to being comfortable getting outside of your comfort zone, growing, and as Ben described, helping to influence and persuade people. All right. So you mentioned analogy on the pitch. For those that didn't grow up with soccer like I did, that's a football term. So we all got to get comfortable with football. It's the world sport. You played soccer a lot growing up and almost basically played professionally. Can you tell us a little bit about your sports background?
Yeah, I don't want to give too much emphasis on my prowess and my skills. My hazing during my freshman year of college when I played D1, they wrote a name on everyone's back. And the name they wrote on my back was Pele. Little did I know that was not because I was as good as the dream player, best player in the world. Pele was being sarcastic. It also hints at a growing lack of self-confidence. You know, that seed was planted at a pretty young age that pretty terribly impacted my level of success and my mental health within sports as well as outside of it. But it didn't prevent me from trying. And so at a younger age, I decided that soccer was going to be the one thing that I tried to do with my life. And I'm not kidding. All I watched on TV, and these were like VHS tapes, right? Other than on the weekends, we didn't have cable, right? So it's was soccer. It was recordings of games. People I hung out with were people that either were related to the sport or people that I'd go work out with. I didn't really go out or socialize. I didn't drink. I woke up and went to practice with my team, but then I would practice two other times during the day on my own. I ate a certain way, so I ate certain foods. I specifically remember eating tuna out of a can for some reason with a fork because I thought that was healthy, and really cut out all junk food. And even reading. I read pretty much soccer books. I was a little obsessed.
Sounds all into me, obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah, and then when college didn't work out because I did not have the place on the team that I wanted, I used the excuse that they canceled my major, which they did, to go transfer universities and to walk on to another team, and got a small scholarship, played. This is like right before I had to get hip surgery, so I was not doing my best, and ended up, disappointingly, the coach lied, and I ended up did not get a position on the team, and I had to make a decision to move back to the old team that I was a part of, went to the coach to ask to get back on. I was there, and he actually was pretty pissed that I left. and said, you know, the team looks up to you, so you can come practice with us. You motivate them, you get them going, but you know, you left, and that shows me you don't really want to be on this team. So that was kind of SOL there. And I ended up deciding, okay, so now's the time I better go get that hip surgery that I need. So One day before my 21st birthday, I had hip surgery and got my bones all fixed up. And then I healed and then I rehabbed and I trained, and probably a little bit too soon, I went to London. I said, I'm going to go to London. I'm going to play as much as I can. So I found all these different teams and all these different boards online. You know, everyone was from Ghana, another team, like everyone was from this other country. One team was all Europeans, and one was actually a feeder team to a semi-pro team and then to a pro team. And so I was on about 3 or 4 or 5 different teams, also going to school in London. And so my days were pretty packed. Yeah, fun though. They were really fun, but pretty packed. And eventually it got to the point where after about 6 months, the feeder team said, look, you can stay. We think you got what it takes to move up to the semi-pro level. I was gaining a little bit of weight from my hip surgery. I lost about like 15 pounds. So I was getting tossed around. But there was hope there, and I had to make a decision. Do I go back and actually work and, you know, try to develop in a different professional career, or do I stay in soccer? And at that point, my mind kind of detached from this negative idea that soccer had to be the thing that I did for the rest of my life. And it saw that there was more that I was capable of and more that I cared about.
That's awesome. Well, I'm sure all of your clients and all the people you helped along the way are glad that you had that realization and went into the world of coaching. So through that experience of kind of bouncing around teams and not basically achieving your ultimate goal at certain milestones, what was the number one leadership lesson you learned through that soccer experience?
That you have to lead yourself, and that you can either be your worst enemy or your greatest champion. And I'd say, so that's the greatest lesson. I would then say that there's a sub lesson, which I'm happy to say, which became kind of the actually topic of the first talk I ever gave in the field of personal and professional development.
All right. So back in season one, we did an episode on the concept of servant leadership, had some cool sports analogies to tie in there with Bruce Arians and other athletes. Something I definitely subscribe to, Ben, of this idea of serving others, putting others' interests ahead of your own. But I know you preach this idea of living for yourself isn't selfish, and living for yourself is really important. So I would love for you to open my mind and the mind of our listeners and tell us a little bit about this and in your philosophy related to that.
And living for yourself and self-leadership just means that you are showing up as you want to show up. You understand what you want. You understand what you stand for. You're confident within yourself and what you want to achieve. And you know what you can control. You know what you can impact. And you are proactive to create that for yourself. Very often, though, a lot of leaders that I work with, especially in their careers, they're very reactive. They also operate by other people's desires. So what they tell, you know, what they tell them to do in terms of, oh, you have to, you know, work on this work. You have to attend this meeting. You can't get this job, or you can't reach out to that person because there's a limiting belief that that person's too busy to actually hear from them. And so leaders create their own boundaries, their own limiting beliefs. And self-leadership and living for yourself just basically means there are no boundaries. You should feel capable and empowered and accountable to create whatever it is that you want to create for yourself. Within soccer, right, I was my own worst enemy. I did not believe in myself, and that lack of confidence held me back from leading myself forward towards the things that I wanted to achieve. It also prevented me from seeing that there were more things that I cared about. So I actually didn't have pure clarity when I was dedicating my life to the sport. I didn't stop and take a step back and say, what is it that I really care about? What is it that I want to achieve within my professional life? What are my values, and how am I showing up each and every single day to try to achieve that? And a lot of individuals, when it comes to thinking that living for yourself is selfish, are mostly thinking, well, what will that other person think about me? Instead of, this is what I think about myself, and this is how I want to live. It doesn't mean at the detriment of other people. What it means is that you are showing up in alignment with who you are, so you can do the things that you want to do that also are going to positively impact the world.
That's awesome. So for career coaching, which it sounds like you do a lot of and help people to get this element of clarity, a roadblock that I'll sometimes run into or hear people have is, I don't know what I want. I don't know where I want to go in my career. I don't know what job I want next. I'm kind of just like going day by day and we'll see what happens. They know they might want more responsibility. They might want more money. They might want to progress in their career, but they feel stuck on what to do, what to say, what to think about. How do you help people to get unstuck when they don't seem to have their own clarity?
What's so nice about soccer is that you have one goal every single game, win, right? And usually that's a team goal, but it's also a personal goal. And you also have a specific position that you're supposed to play in. You have a role to play in the team. So if you believe in yourself and you've been training well and you believe in your team and you don't get down on yourself when you mess up once or twice because you realize that mistakes happen and that you're making progress, like you have clarity. You know exactly what it is that you want to do. And you know what you can control. I can control when I have the ball, period. I can control when I don't have the ball. I'm going to run to a specific space, period. I can't control the other players. I can't control the other team. I can't control the weather. I can't control my coach. And so self-leadership is actually pretty much defined by this, by a sport itself. But when it comes to our career, we get lost because we don't know what we want. And we go, well, I think I know what I want, but maybe I don't know what I want. Or I tried to get what I want, but look at all the bad things that happened because I tried to get what I want. So I don't want to go after what I want again. So it's a scary question. What if I choose wrong? And very often I work with leaders that actually have made a career transition. They've been working in a new job. They changed from a previous job. They left what they thought was a terrible career. Now they regret it. Because about a year into this role, they're like, it's the same, but maybe even worse. And so then individuals just sit in self-doubt and they go, well, maybe I better not make another decision. Or they actually think work's terrible. Nobody should work and they want to escape and go work for themselves. And so they've basically created their own limiting beliefs that are holding them back from taking action in their career. One aspect of clarity that tends to be forgotten is that we create clarity from action and partially from reflection. Very often people don't take action because they're waiting for the answer. But that answer can't actually come without some trial and error. And so if people are wondering, well, what do I do? I say, what have you done? What are you doing? And most of the time we actually have an instinct, an inkling of what we want to do, but fear holds ourselves back from actually trying it out. So I actually think that more people know what they want than they actually realize. And if they gave themselves full permission to explore the things they want, their desires, even just a trial, like go test something out on the weekend, go read an article, listen to a podcast, go have a conversation with someone that's doing it, then you would reinforce that thing that you think that you might want, that's kind of at your gut, and you might be more motivated to take action. But to get more specific, what we can do for our careers is do a career audit and figure out where our career sweet spot is. And that basically involves the following questions. And I recommend whoever is listening right now to pop out the notes app on your phone, get a piece of paper and a pen, open up a Word document on your computer, whatever it is, just pause for a second. You probably have heard these questions before, but you've probably skipped over them before, not actually spent the time to answer them. What are your strengths? So these are your superpowers. So about we list out at least 30 if you can. If you can't make it to 30, you probably can. Go to at least 20. These are the things that you've learned over the years. You can even start something as simple, like what did you go to school for if you went to school, right? I got a marketing degree with a minor in management and nutrition. I have a degree in public health policy, and I have a degree in entrepreneurial management, and I have a degree in organizational leadership. Each one of those degrees, you can list out all the strengths and skills that you've learned over time. And then you can go through all your jobs and list all your major projects and list all the strengths and skills that you've learned. Try to get at least 20 to 30. The things that pop up first are probably going to be more of your superpower. These are the things that are really, really easy to you. You then want to ask yourself, well, what do I want to learn 6 months, a year, 2, 3 years from now? What are the things that I get excited about? These are the challenges that you want to face. The skills that if you looked back on from when you retired, these are the things that you wanted to learn. Most recently, I actually accomplished a lot of the things that I wanted to learn. I wanted to go internal and I wanted to build a talent development program and build a performance management system from scratch. So now I actually have to, after this, step back and say, Ben, what do you want to learn? Because I've done it. I figured out where I needed my career sweet spot to go for a little bit. Then the other section is, what are you passionate about? What lights you up? What brings you joy? This can be your career superpowers, the things you're good at, but it might not be. It might be something that you have to start exploring. For me personally, what brings me joy? Helping others become more empowered and accountable for their own levels of job satisfaction and helping organizations become places people can do that. And that's why I do what I do. That's my whole career. And I can do that in a variety of ways. I can do that through a workshop. I can do it through this on a podcast. I can do it through one-on-one coaching. I can do it through writing my book right now. It'll be published this year. I can do it through the course that I developed, do it through mentoring. And those three intersect into a specific point in time. And that is where you should be right now. It's your career sweet spot. If you are not there, then we can focus on job crafting, meaning I can change my job, either the work I'm doing, the people I work with, the meaning that I see behind my work, to be best fit to that. And then if you're like, well, what if I'm not in a job right now where that's even possible? So now you have some information to figure out where you might want to go next. And then you can expand this to say, what organizations might be a good fit for me? Who would be my boss in those organizations? And can I go reach out to those people to initially have a conversation with them to learn more about their work and to get curious, not to ask for a job yet, because you don't know. And if you do this activity and you do those outreaches, and maybe if this brings up curiosity, so you listen to a podcast like this because you're interested in leadership development,
mm-hmm.
then that will be enough action to help give you clarity to lead you towards where you should go next in your career.
Wow, that was awesome. Action oriented. I hope everyone paused. I hope they were typing that into the notes section of their phone or writing it down. Really great stuff, Ben. What I want to circle back to is how you kicked off, which was basically you create clarity through action. And sitting still, waiting for the clarity to come to you, to smack you in the face, waiting for your manager to give you clarity or tap you on the shoulder for the job that you want, is a limiting belief, is holding yourself back. What is much better to do is to take action in some regard. If nothing else, get out on the pitch and start kicking the ball around. Take some time to self-reflect, answer those couple questions, and find what I think I heard you say, find the career sweet spot where those three things are intersecting. By thinking through that, by reflecting, by taking action, listening to a podcast, reading an article, you're probably going to have an inkling of what you want and what you want to do. And then it's about finding that career sweet spot, whether that's within your existing role, your existing company, a different company, an entrepreneurial spirit. But you should not sit back and wait for your career sweet spot to come to you. You should be actively working towards it in what you want and what you want to take. Is that a fair summarization of what I think I heard?
That's perfect. And I just want to build on it for a second, because I'm getting these images of soccer in my mind. In any sport, if you just stood still, ignored the game at all, would you accomplish your goal? Would you win? Maybe the other team might do something, but you wouldn't be a part of it. No, you have to move. You have to make runs. You have to cut. You have to evaluate the field where everybody is and create opportunities for yourself. And that clarity comes from movement. Because the goal scoring opportunities don't come from standing still. They come from constantly moving and creating space and creating change and drawing people to different locations and making runs and also sometimes building up a state of flow with your teammates.
Mm.
So nothing in life really comes to, I can't really think of anything that comes from standing still.
All right. You heard it here. Make moves, take action. Don't be the guy or gal sitting on the court that's staying still on the pitch, staying in one spot. You got to move. You got to make runs. You got to make cuts. You got to find the open spot. Where I want to connect this to next, Ben, is I imagine that confidence is an important part of this. And confidence, you know, similar to clarity, probably doesn't come magically. Confidence comes through action. How important is confidence when you're coaching people related to their career? And what's your approach to help build up their confidence?
Confidence is important in everything. I would be a professional soccer player right now if it wasn't for confidence.
Mm.
I doubted myself terribly. I mean, I doubted myself so much that I started hating myself, which then developed into a pretty severe eating disorder. And I had to believe in myself to be able to surpass it and get by it. I even at one point, and this is actually pretty neat, because that lack of confidence caused me to look up how to be confident, like literally type in Ask Jeeves or Yahoo, right? How to be confident. And that started me down the path of personal development, which led to professional development, led to leadership development. And I remember the first book I read, it was like my Bible, and I have a copy still. I bought a new copy because the one I had was pretty torn up. It was called Mind Gym. And there's another one that I learned about later on called The Inner Game of Tennis. And both of them focus heavily on our mental ability to impact our performance. So confidence is absolutely critical. absolutely critical. And every single client I've ever worked with struggles with a lack of confidence. And I actually will go as far as to say almost every single person in the world struggles with a lack of confidence in some way, shape, or form, in some aspect of their life. So it's normal. Doubt is unbelievably normal. It is our brain going, hey, this is something that you care about. It's really important to you. You should pay attention. Our previous experiences can then, based on our own, or the results of our action, can then take that and make it spiral out of control. Such as when me on the pitch and I get a pass and maybe I mess up that one pass, my inner voice goes, you're terrible. You're horrible. I can't believe you're even on this game. You're never going to be successful. And it gets just worse and worse because I focus on the negative voice. I focus on the negative information that goes, hey, you have an important pass in front of you. This might be good, important for the game. Might be important for you. And then when I mess up, I focus on the negative voice that goes, you know, that inner critic. But if instead I built myself up and said, you'll get it next time, or you've done that a bunch of times, it's fine, it would change the game for me and actually build up my inner champion instead of my inner critic. In the work environment, people tend to go, oh, that was stupid. I can't believe I said that. Or look at that. They're looking at me funny. That's not good. They probably don't think I'm very good at this. Or they hold themselves back from sharing what they think during a meeting because they're worried about what the people are going to think of them. You know, going back to this idea of most of our lack of confidence and what holds us back is our concern for what people think about us. Hmm. Or I'm not going to apply to that job because I don't believe I'm good enough. I don't believe I'm going to be able to actually do it, or they're not going to pick me, or I don't want to deal with the rejection because rejection feels more terrible than actually applying for something and putting myself out there. So if you're anyone listening to this resonates with anything I've shared right now about a lack of confidence, it's completely normal. But you have to ask yourself, is it serving you? Is it helping you reach your goals?
That makes a lot of sense. Can I ask from a leadership perspective? So if I'm a leader, I notice that my team lacks confidence. I see this self-doubt. I see them resisting sharing their information in meetings. And I start to probe a little bit and understand underneath it is a pretty big lack of confidence. To your point, the self-doubt that comes in, they've had moments where they've spoke up in a meeting in the past and maybe got their wrist slapped from a leader, or maybe felt like they said something dumb and now they're kind of going into a shell. What do you do as a coach to help pull them out of that and help them to shift their mindset from, as you described, a self-critic to a self-promoter?
So they have to feel safe. They first off have to feel safe. And right now, a lot of organizations are struggling with that because of a lot of the separations and layoffs that are happening and the current market conditions. So you as a leader have to help them feel safe in any way, shape, or form that you can. That can involve sharing information from the organization about how the organization is doing, sharing information about their ability to be in that position, their longevity. Now, if that's not possible, then you can share positive recognition. Talk about sharing the highlight reel. Hmm. So in sports, you can show players clips of people messing up, of them messing up, to try to teach them. Or you can show them clips where they've done really well and performed at their best in a state of flow. Research shows that the highlight reel actually improves performance more than going over clips where they did poorly. And so in a work environment, your job as a leader is to not focus on things that they've done wrong in the past, but instead to provide positive recognition on the things that they're doing right and that you want to see more of in the future. And then in things where they need to do better, instead of giving advice, you coach. So you basically you guide them to figure out how to solve the problem themselves. That increases engagement, it increases trust, and more importantly, they're going to see you as a mentor and guide. And ultimately, it improves confidence.
One of my favorite episodes we did was, I think, episode 5, called Coaching Isn't Coaching, where people that grew up in sports like me had this construct of coaching, which is a very instructive, advice-giving approach, right? But coaching in a business and coaching in a professional sense is the opposite. It's asking questions and guiding people their own solution. And in my observations, that's the most underused skill by leaders, that they resist the urge to coach because they feel that they have the answer, they want to give advice, or maybe they never really learned the skill of coaching and it's a tough habit to break from giving advice to coaching, but it is the most powerful way to unlock people. So I'm so glad that you threw that plug in. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, I would definitely recommend you check that one out and shift your mindset on what coaching is and your role as a coach. All right.
For everybody
listening,
just if you're wondering why you don't know how to coach, I don't have the time to go study all these books or anything like that. It's just ask three more questions than you would at any other time. So if someone brings a problem to you, ask three more questions. That's it. To learn more about what's going on instead of giving it advice. And you'll be on your way to start coaching. Then go listen to that podcast that Nate just said. And then go buy the book, The Coaching Habit, and practice. Get a friend, peer in an organization, bring in a coach to do a workshop on coaching. You know, these are like more advanced steps.
Sure.
But in the beginning, just ask three more questions, period.
Everyone can do that, right? People will come and ask you a question, bring you a problem. Ask three more questions. There's nothing hard about that. That's just a discipline to do it. And if you can get that down, you're probably further along than 80% of the leaders out there. And you can be one of the best leaders that your associates will have. So big plug for coaching. I want to mention what you said before to Ben around the highlight reel versus the blooper reel, essentially, and the power of the positive psychology of that. I took executive presence course many years ago. And one of the things that really stuck with me on that is this idea, she described it as an anchor. So you have a really good experience, you have an awesome presentation, you have a good meeting, and that's a mental anchor that you think about, that you play back in your head enough times that you reflect on it and can relive it. And then before you go into a similar situation, the next presentation, the next meeting, you just take 30 seconds to relive that experience in your head. Close your eyes, go back to your anchor, and you will walk in with a positive talk track for yourself as opposed to self-doubt. So something I try to do with my team and coach to them is anytime they have an anchor, I talk to them about their anchor and talk to them about using that anchor to carry it forward, which is essentially a highlight reel. So I'm definitely going to start using that analogy because I try to use as many sports analogies as possible. But is there anything else you want to share about this concept of a highlight reel or an anchor? Because I think that's such a powerful thing that people can do in a really easy way to help their folks, help their team to be more positive.
I mean, even just for yourself, as you said, you know, what is that anchor for you personally? And are you sharing your successes? I love creating a success folder. So just a folder on your desktop, any email, any win on a project, any notes from yourself that you're proud of, throw it in that success folder and open that up whenever you need it. Whenever you're going to go into a really stressful meeting, whenever you're going into a one-on-one that you know you might get some constructive feedback, that's a way to ensure that you are filled up with energy when you're about to get drained a little bit. And you can do the same for others. So you can create a folder for each one of your direct reports, throw in a lot of positivity into it, and then bring it up during your one-on-ones or during your performance review, or even just share with them, or even at the end of the year, be like, look at all these wins that you have, and just, you can create that for them too. Basically, what you need to do is create an environment that is filled with positivity for them. And that goes also for crushing, and I use the word crushing, negativity that comes up and conflict that comes up within public meetings, or even from that they share themselves out loud about themselves. You're the leader, so you ensure that the culture of your team is consistent or aligned with what you want to create. It also means that if you see something in an organization from another leader that does not align with the culture that you need, especially from a positivity standpoint, that you are being upfront and transparent about how that is not acceptable. And very often I've seen leaders just kind of brush things over to be like, it's uncomfortable. I don't want to bring it up. I don't want to go to them. And they're doing more harm, right? They're poisoning the environment because their direct reports are watching them. And every time that you let something pass that goes against the culture of your organization or is criticism or critical of someone on your team and it's not deserved, or maybe it just wasn't rightly, it wasn't done in a very tactful way, they're going to lose trust in you.
All right. Success folder. One for yourself, one for each member of your team. Really easy thing to do. Have that highlight reel, catch them doing good, share that with them. It's going to build trust. It's going to build relationships. And it's also going to help them and yourself to be in a better positive mindset. Okay, Ben, I got to ask about this because I'm fascinated. As I said, I played basketball and baseball growing up, was never too into soccer. Now I'm super into it for the World Cup, especially Team USA. I live and die by some of those games. And my wife is the hugest Ted Lasso fan. So we watch every episode multiple times at this point. Excited for season two to drop very soon. Season three. One thing I need to know more about is penalty kicks. Seems like really high pressure, especially at the end of a World Cup game. And it sure feels like confidence and the mental gym inside of you is one of the biggest factors in being successful for penalty kicks. So talk to me about the experience that you've had with penalty kicks and how that translates to this idea of leading yourself and having a positive outlook.
Ooh, penalty kicks. I didn't want to be some of those players. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to be thinking that for the rest of their lives. And if they've done some inner work, they're just going to let it pass over them and not come back to it. When it comes to penalty kicks or even honestly performing on a pitch, the best performers are people that can actually stop thinking. And a lot of research in regards to flow and for athletes shows that their best performance comes when they let their body take over. Because they've been practicing, they've been training, and you're in the game, so you're not going to get any better. You're just going to have to perform. And so that hesitation and trying to think critically actually prevents your muscle memory from acting. And the same can go for, when you've done the work to get clarity, when you know who you are, you know what you stand for, you know what you can control and you can't control, and you believe in yourself. Same thing goes for self-leadership within a professional environment. If you are in your head doubting yourself and wondering what to do or trying to play the political game and trying to play chess, what should I say and when should I say it, then you're not going to be at your best. And so when you get up to that penalty kick to take the shot, just like any moment in your work, are you overthinking it or are you just playing? And as leaders, we have to just play. You can go reflect, you can think critically, you can do all that work after work or in your downtime. When you're in that meeting, when you're in that one-on-one, when you're geared up and ready to go, you need to just let your skills take over. Now that's to say, like, you're not going to shout or scream or yell or call anyone names or be abusive, right? This is like with the understanding that you've done that work. But I would say just trust, you need to trust yourself more. And we don't.
Yeah, the parallel I'm thinking in my head is you have that penalty kick, you're coming up to approach the ball, and the goalie fakes one way, and you start to think, right? You had an approach, you had a plan, and you're not letting your body take over. I see sometimes in meetings, folks that lack confidence start to share something or start to pitch an idea, and they might see negative body language from someone, or someone might make a face or make a reaction. And they start this whole talk track in their head and they get flustered and they kind of move off of their recommendation almost in the moment because of the goalie faking them out. And I like what you said around letting your body take over, feeling like you've done the work, you've prepared, and not letting yourself get thrown off in the moment and just letting your body take over. So I don't know if you have a thought on that related to the parallel to folks, not just in their career, but in kind of the day-to-day and losing confidence, like in the midst of a conversation because of how someone might be acting or responding to them initially.
And when it comes to the conversation itself, it's more so remembering what the goal is. So in a penalty kick, it's to get it in the net. And the way the goalie goes in that close of a distance doesn't matter as much. So you have a set strategy you have to follow through. If not, you're not going to be able to follow through completely with yourself. In a conversation, it's a little different, but also similar. You have to remember that there isn't a timeline. There isn't a time limit. So in a penalty kick, there's a clock going down. But if you get lost in a conversation, it's totally okay to just pause and stop. People that lack confidence, one of the hardest things for them to do is actually deal with silence. And so you have to be okay with silence because that silence allows you to reset, ask yourself, what am I trying to accomplish right now? What is the goal? What do I have to add? And then provide that information. I was working with a leader the other day. He was in a meeting and he held back. And I said, well, what did he do after? What did he do after the meeting? So nothing. He got down on himself. He berated himself for how he did not share the thing he wanted to share in a meeting. I go, the meeting wasn't the only time you could play. Like, so the penalty kick is the only time you could shoot. There's still a whole game going on. In our career, the entire game is always going. So that individual coach went through the situation and he had some follow-up steps to do after the meeting. So he was going to still accomplish his goal. He still was going to hit it in the back of the net. And so we have to understand that the game is not just in a meeting. It's not just in the one-on-one. It's not just in an email. You can always win. And so are you forgetting the fact that you can still shoot the ball in the net? Because you're beating yourself up for the fact that you missed it, you know, you missed the first goal or missed the pass.
You get unlimited shots at the goal. I think everyone needs to remember that. And we did an episode of a session a few episodes ago on Joe Paterno and college football. And thinking about college football, one of the things you'll hear is don't lose to a team twice, which means oftentimes you'll have highly ranked teams. They have that bubble burst game where they lose, they get upset, and then they're so down from that game, they lose the next game too, right? So the team that beat them the first time actually beat them twice because it wasn't the next opponent that beat them, they beat themselves. And what I'm hearing you saying, which I think is so powerful, is you get unlimited games, you get unlimited shots at the net. Don't let the one miss turn into 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other misses. Move on from the first miss, move forward, and make the next shot, right? And that's such a positive psychology. I teach that all the time when I coach basketball, coach baseball. Next shot, next play. You're always looking forward. You're not staying in the past. And I think the point here is that we do that too much in business and our professional life, that we stay in the past and we focus on the missed shot. Ben, you mentioned coaching a leader recently. So I wanted to ask you, since you do a ton of this work, do you have a favorite story or maybe a summarization of a couple stories of a real proud moment that you've had as a coach and helping someone to break through in their career or get that clarity that you talk about that you'd want to share with the audience?
I have examples of having a conversation with someone and them getting confident to go ask for a raise and getting a 40% raise the next day, conversations with individuals that were in a toxic environment, but were able to provide feedback to their leader, and automatically that completely changed what they had to deal with each and every single day. But one that I'd like to share is with a client that is also a soccer fan, which is kind of cool. And so the beginning of our sessions usually started with talking about how our favorite team did. But he was a leader in an environment that was pretty toxic, that was also filled with fear because they were going to close and potentially sell. They weren't doing financially very well, but cared very, very deeply about the people that were on his team and his direct reports, and thought that he couldn't do the things he needed to do for himself because what would happen to the people that he cared about. Not only that, he doubted his own professional success because he was working in that position for about 10 years. So he wasn't really aware of what kind of the job market was like and didn't really think his dream career was out there. So he was holding himself back a lot. And so he initially worked on just getting a greater understanding of what he wanted to create for his career. Like, what is that dream next step? Let's let go of all his limiting beliefs and figure out what that next step is for you. Then built some confidence in himself to be able to navigate the job market. So part of that was technical. Part of that was just kind of understanding what's out there, how to win the game, the power of building relationships and networking, of building that professional brand and getting it out there, as well as how could he still serve the people that he cared about? Because he felt very responsible for the success of the people that were in the organization that were under him. And part of that is a little bit of self-importance. It's part of it's I'm getting my validation from this specific area. And part of it is also remembering that that relationship is going to stay. It's not going away because you leave. And so how can you serve them while you leave? What can you do for them to ensure that your relationship is valuable, that you feel like you're actually giving them some direction and guidance still, instead of just leaving a sinking ship and letting everybody sink? You know, can you bring some people along with you? Or can you help guide them? Can you help them build their own boats? Be their mentor? And so what actually happened is unreal, because usually it takes a little bit longer than this. But on his first networking outreach, he ended up connecting with somebody because he was so sure of his brand. He knew what he wanted to create. During that conversation, he brought it up. And guess what? That person was actually creating that ideal position for himself, literally as he spoke. And so he created a brand new agency that he was going to run, brand new school and agency. It's unreal that this happened. And I tend to find when I work with clients, when they get intentional, when they invest energy into what they want to achieve, it's really neat to see what the world responds with. And so in that first conversation, about a month later, he was hired to run this brand new agency and school and was able to leave his previous position, was able to give guidance and mentor the people that used to work for him and kind of be his own boss in one of a globally renowned organization, had a dream career, making more money. And he could say that he actually was, you know, he's happy. He created a career that he really loved, and he actually did create it, which is kind of nuts. Like it was built from scratch and he was the one responsible for it.
Such an inspiring story. I bet a lot of people have goosebumps right now thinking about that dream that they have, right? That's probably out there, and finding it is such a fulfilling thing. And thank you. One of our ground rules is attitude of gratitude on the show and just offering gratitude to folks. So gratitude to you, Ben, for what you're doing for your clients and helping them to create those fulfilling experiences and those fulfilling roles. I imagine folks want to learn more based on what they just heard. I would definitely encourage them to go to your website, Live for Yourself Consulting. We'll link that in the show notes. You can do what I did and get a free copy of the first couple chapters of an ebook, which is super helpful in walking through 5 key steps. Ben, you've mentioned a number of different, very tangible and tactical things that people can do throughout the episode, but we always like to close on an episode challenge. So this is one simple thing that everyone can do to make themselves better. So you're welcome to rehash one that you shared throughout, or if you have a new one, but if you were to suggest to folks one thing they could do to be better in terms of navigating their career, what would you advise everyone to do?
You're going to laugh because it's kind of different. It's kind of outside the realms of what we've been talking about.
Go for it.
Just get up 15 minutes earlier than what you're doing right now. Get up 15 minutes earlier. Create some space and not, don't pick up your phone, right? Create some space for yourself that you didn't have each morning. You will find that during that time that you will do what you need to do for yourself. Either your mind will connect ideas and thoughts that you didn't know, be able to plan for your day in a way that you didn't do before. Ultimately, you will start creating more space to be your own leader. So try that out. Really simple. Everybody can do it. Don't fill it with anything yet. Just see if you can get it 15 minutes earlier. And then we can leverage that time to help you move towards your goals.
All right, everyone. No excuses for that one. 15 minutes early. All of us can do that, myself included. Get up, give yourself the space. And as Ben said, that's the first step towards taking care of yourself, leading for yourself. Ben, I appreciate all the insights that you offered. How can folks find you? Like I said, I'll mention the website, link that in the show notes. But what else would you want to share about the work you're doing and how people can find out more about the awesome stuff that you're doing to help people with their careers?
Yeah, the website's the best way, liveforyourselfconsulting.com. You get that free guide if you go on it. And then also LinkedIn, Dr. Benjamin Ritter. I post pretty regularly. I have 2 podcasts that I post about, YouTube channel that I post about. So check it out.
That's awesome. If I'm lucky enough, we can do a home and home. I can come on your show.
That's the plan.
All right. I love it. Well, Ben, thanks so much. You gave, like I said, a ton of actionable suggestions. I think this episode goes really nicely with our last episode with Dr. Taryn Marie Stayskell and talking about resiliency and leading for yourself. I think a lot of really helpful things. And you know, the point of this, if you aren't your best version of yourself, the team isn't going to succeed, right? So even if we play a team sport, you have to take care of yourself. You have to lead yourself. You have to work through your own self-doubt and be the best version of yourself. So really excited that we got a chance to talk to you, Ben, and thank you for sharing all the insights with our audience.
Of course. I'm pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Have a good one.